Real quick, before we get to the water cooler cheat sheet, want to address a comment that was made by Joel on the Facebook chat. He said, so you're saying if your schedule is trash, then there should be no chance you're ranked high in the AP. Maybe not at all. Strength of schedule matters. Oh, to be quite clear, Joel. Yeah. Strength of schedule matters. I've never said it doesn't. I just think you have to be very careful, especially considering now that the Southeastern Conference and Big Ten, and I'm assuming now that the Big 12 and the AP or in the ACC are going to follow suit. Now that we are moving to 9 conference game regular seasons, what you have to be careful about is that you don't end up in a spot where everybody in your conference is ranked highly, and then as a result, everybody's schedule by default before we play a game looks like a very tough schedule, because when you have 9 of the top 25 spots in your conference, by way of everybody playing against each other, you go, oh, everybody in that conference is playing a bunch of other top 25 teams. This is why I have said I think that I understand the significance of and the reasoning behind preseason top 25 polls, even though if you really take a second to think about it, they should not exist. But I understand why they do, and I understand we're going to have them. This is why I spent yesterday's show saying multiple times, the first AP poll, the AP poll that came out yesterday after week one, that poll should not reflect the preseason poll at all. So I do think that strength of schedule should matter, but I do not think we should be able to, and this is, I think, maybe where I kind of get off the beaten path a little bit. I don't think that anyone, including teams in the SEC, and I've already told you, I think the Southeastern Conference is going to prove itself, and I use that language intentionally. I think that the SEC is going to prove itself to being one of the, this year, deepest conferences in the history of conferences playing college football. But when I say it's going to prove itself, I also believe that strength of schedule should be evaluated as the season progresses, not before it starts. For the same reason, I'm not going to look at Ole Miss right now and go, goodness gracious, what an incredible strength of schedule they have. Because what if Texas stinks? What if everybody in the world overestimated what the University of Texas is this year? What if everybody in the world got Texas wrong and it turns out they're just an okay football team? What if they're a bad football team?
Are we talking like Florida State last year bad?
Yeah.
I mean, because remember how it was coming in after Florida State's undefeated season coming in the next season. There was all the hype and everything.
Exactly.
And then fell. I mean,
and think about
that's just
think
the first
about,
example that comes to mind.
It's a great example because how many teams in the ACC last year got a boost because, oh, Florida State coming off an undefeated year. Like having Florida State on your schedule was going into last year, that was a crown jewel for your schedule. Like you have Florida State. If you can beat Florida State, then it turns out everybody could beat Florida State. So at the end of the year, having Florida State on your schedule was friggin' less valuable than having Southern Miss on your schedule at the end of last year. This is why I would say strength of schedule matters, but I don't think we can evaluate it until like week 8 or week 9. Because right now, sincerely, does having Texas on your schedule boost your strength of schedule right now? The answer to me is no.
For now, yes. Well, maybe 5 weeks from now, no.
And again, maybe 5 weeks from now, we look and we go, man, maybe. And again, results, right? Because if Ohio State goes out and Ohio State runs off 10 straight wins and they put up 50 in every game, then maybe we evaluate Texas and go, it turns out that loss wasn't as bad as we thought it was. But with what we have to evaluate right now, on the scale of truth, The Penn is closer to Texas bad than Ohio State good. So if you have Texas on the schedule, what we thought was going to be a massive boost to your strength of schedule today, not so much. This is why, yes, strength of schedule matters a lot. But I do not think your strength of schedule should be evaluated or determined by the preseason rankings. Your strength of schedule should be evaluated and determined as the season goes on, as we get to see objective metrics and measurements of what teams accomplish, and subjectively, we get to watch these teams and see how good they are or are not.
By the way, I'm self-reporting. I got one there. I hit so, and then I hit so, it was off the air. So about the time when CFP happens.
That is one of the things they got right. We absolutely should not have playoff rankings until, at the earliest, early November. Let's get through September and October, and then in November, we can start to say, this team is good, this team is bad. Because here's another thing. Ohio State, 55 first-place votes in the AP poll. What happens if, what's our evaluation of Ohio State and Texas? And this won't happen. But what happens if Ohio State goes out and they beat Grambling 21-14? Now, all of a sudden, maybe we go, damn, Ohio State and Texas are both not as good as we thought. We can say, based on the eye test and what we saw with Texas-Ohio State, we got the preseason rankings wrong. But I would also argue that we still don't know what those two teams are in comparison to anybody except each other. We only know how good they are relative to each other. So if Ohio State goes out and they beat Grambling 17-14 this weekend, not only do we go, damn, maybe Ohio State's not as good as we thought, but now we got to drop what we thought Texas was even more because they lost to that team. That's not going to happen. But the point is, subjectively speaking, we only know what Texas and Ohio State are relative to each other. This is why I do not evaluate strength of schedule until we get to November. One of the things they got right, and it's more than just this, but one of the things they got right when they put the playoff format together is not having a playoff ranking until November, when these teams have 6, 7, 8 games under their belt. So we have a little bit more, even though we may fall victim to, you know, the subjectivity of college football. What's the thing we talk about where A beats B, B beats C, doesn't mean A will beat C?
Transitive property.
Yes, it's like my favorite thing to talk about, how to forget the transitive property of football. We can't fall victim to that. All right, let's take a break. Not take a break. What the hell's wrong with me? Let's do this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports. This AM, when you do this, is what you'll talk about. We got to jump on it. Item number one. Couple of baseball stories right out of the gate because, yes, college football is underway. Yes, the National Football League is getting started this weekend. It does not matter. Baseball season is still ongoing. The Braves dropped their 5th out of the last 6 on the road last night, taking on the Chicago Cubs. Joey Wentz got the nod, gave up 7 hits, 4 earned runs through just 4 innings, did strike out 8 while taking his 5th loss, dropping his record to 5-5. From the dish, Ozzie Albies had a dong. Greenville native Eli White had a dong, his 8th of the season. Came in the 5th inning off of Imanaga. The Braves as a team collected 8 hits on the night, but they did go just 1-for-2. 50% is great. Not when you only have 2 situations at bat with runners in scoring position. 7 hits surrendered by the entire staff to the Chicago Cubs, including a Kyle Tucker dong. Kyle Tucker did walk off with calf tightness after that spot. The other quick baseball story in item number one, Shohei Ohtani, home run number 46 last night, but that is not the number that is impressive. What is impressive is that it was Shohei Ohtani's 100th home run as a member of the LA Dodgers. It came in game number 294. How good is Shohei Ohtani? Why has Rob Brown for 2 years now said Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player in the history of the game? Not only is he a Cy Young caliber hitter. He won the MVP as a DH last year. And to put into perspective the fact that it took him 294 games to hit 100 career dongs with the Dodgers, the fastest anyone has ever made it to 100 in that franchise, the guy he outpaced was Gary Sheffield. It took Gary Sheffield 399 games to swat a hundo with the Dodgers. It took him 444 to hit up 100 with the Angels. It took Shohei Ohtani 294. The guy is an all-timer. Let's get to item number two. I'm going to do an abbreviated version of this one because I am going to both play the audio for you and respond to it in the next segment of the show. But Dabo Swinney did his post-game press conference yesterday, and in it, he kind of went in on Cade Klubnik specifically, said that he was messing up, and I quote, base plays, end quote, said he was getting day one stuff wrong, said he was missing guys and missing reads, and said, if two ain't a dude, we ain't gonna win. And then said on Saturday night against LSU, two was not a dude. Now, the question mark, the debate raging on between Clemson fans that I have seen already this morning is, was Dabo saying this because he genuinely feels Cade Klubnik, a Heisman Trophy frontrunner this year, was a disappointment? Or was Dabo saying this because he believes Cade Klubnik is the type of dude like Batman? You'll chase me because you have to. Was he putting this on Cade so that he could take the heat and criticism off of other members of the team because he knows that Cade Klubnik as a leader can take it? I'm going to argue it's actually the former. That Cade Klubnik actually had a bad football game on Saturday. Not that he will every game. Not that that is an indicator of what his season is going to be. But I do think Cade was off on Saturday. And I do think not exclusive, but a large part of the reason that LSU walked into Death Valley North and took the dub away from Clemson was on Cade Klubnik. We're going to react to Dabo's comments coming up in the next segment of the show, but let's get to item number three. We stay in college football, as item number three will be throughout the year on Wednesday. College football, the AP Top 25 poll is out. After their home win over Texas, the Ohio State Buckeyes leapfrog the Penn State Nittany Lions. They jump to number one, up a pair of spots. They also now hold 55 of the available first place votes. Penn State stays put at number two. They also have 7 first place votes. LSU jumps after their road win at Clemson. And this tells you that the AP poll still does have a lot of respect for Clemson. LSU, of all of the teams in the top 25 that got a win, only one team jumped more spots than LSU did, who jumped from 9 to 6 with the win. The only team who jumped more, in fairness, Ohio State could not jump more than 2 spots to number one, but the only team that jumped more spots was Florida State, who went from outside the top 25 to number 14. LSU at number 3 with 3 first place votes. No first place votes for number 4 Georgia or number 5 Miami. One of them in the final first place vote to number 6 Oregon. Rounding out the top 10, 0-1 Texas, 0-1 Clemson, 0-1 Notre Dame, and 1-0 South Carolina. On one hand, Gamecock fans, you have made your debut inside of the Associated Press Top 10. On the other hand, your debut inside the Associated Press Top 10 is behind 3 one-loss teams, including Texas, Clemson, and Notre Dame. Illinois is number 11, Arizona State 12. The Mighty Gators of Florida move up 2 spots to 13 right behind them. Their in-state rival, the number 14-ranked Florida State Seminoles, who go from unranked to 14 after their win over Bama. Florida State leapfrogs Michigan down a spot to number 15. Iowa State up 6 spots to number 16. SMU down 1 spot to number 17. Oklahoma holds pat at 18. A&M does the same at 19. Ole Miss, Alabama, Tennessee, Indiana, Texas Tech, and the Utah Utes round out your top 25. Alabama, the lowest ranked one-loss team at number 21. Let's grab a quick phone call before we go to the break. Lonzo, my phone call software is not working. Who we got?
We have Christy.
Christy, welcome to the Rob Brown Show. Spectacular to have you.
It is wonderful to be here. I just want to share a quick story about what you were talking about with the Clemson fan and
yes.
the double birds.
Yes.
That happened to me at a Clemson-South Carolina game at South Carolina. And we're going back some years. I think it was 2015 because it was an odd year and my son was about 13. So two kids, obviously students, were dressed in astronaut uniforms. Sitting in front of us, and the dude was fine. You know, he was appropriately obnoxious. You can say that. But the girl turns around and looks at my 13-year-old and said, "Take that, MF-er."
Christy,
I was hot, but I also wanted to show some decorum in front of my son. And I said, I'd appreciate it if you didn't use that kind of language in front of my child. And she turned around, flipped her blonde hair. Well, she did it again, and it was worse. I mean, she called him some really bad names. And he's 13. So I quietly moved myself out into the aisle, and I said, could you keep an eye on her? She's harassing my 13-year-old son to one of the event staff. And she watched. And she got kicked out. And she looked back at her boyfriend and said, are you not coming? And goes, no, I'm not leaving the game. Are you kidding me?
Christy, first off,
and it was
applause to you for handling it the right way. Because while I am, and I want to be clear, I am 100% fine with that dude putting that other dude into the wall. I also have to say, context of the situation, it is one thing to do that at your house when there's 70,000 of your fans there to kind of have your back. It's another thing to do that on the road. The absolute best way to handle that is to get homegirl booted from the stadium and to make her have to leave the stadium with boyfriend who said, no, my football team comes before you. You got Christy.
Right.
You got the ultimate revenge in that situation. Bravo.
I did. And I was so proud because I could have knocked her in the next week. And I'm a nonviolent person, but that's my child and I'm mama bear.
Yeah.
So I had adrenaline pumping. I could have easily thrown her over the hedge into the players. But I didn't. I thought better to get her tail kicked out in the first quarter and not enjoy because we got pounded, but
Christy,
that was pretty bad.
Phenomenal phone call. Thank you very much. You are welcome on the Rob Brown Show anytime. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Great story. That's the ultimate dub right there. The ultimate dub because not only did you get her booted from the game, but then the boy toy was like, sweetheart, I love my football team more than I love you. She not only had to walk home, she had to walk home with that knowledge, that homeboy, that boyfriend, that boy toy, fiance, husband, wife, boy, whatever he was. She had to walk home with the knowledge that he said, I'm taking my football team over you. I'm taking my football team over you. That's the ultimate dub. I'm a nonviolent person too. I've said many times, I've never been in a fist fight in my life. I've shoved a dude to the ground once or twice, all right? Because even the nonviolent, like sometimes you gotta bully a bully. Sometimes a bully only understands, oh, that dude could kick my ass if he wanted to. Maybe I should stop. I'm gonna say for the young lady having to walk home, not being able to finish the game, and with a boyfriend going, yeah, I'll see you when I see you, sweetheart. Take a hike. Good dub for Christy there. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show. Dabo criticizing Cade. We'll address that next on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. So what are we blaming? Because you got to blame something. What are we blaming the loss to LSU on? What are we blaming the L on? I gave you yesterday what I thought was the primary factor in that L. I thought it was, honestly, offensive play calling. I thought it was lacking imagination, lacking creativity. It was uninspiring, to say the very least. Well, there is another contender for the taking the blame crown. And it was put forward by Dabo Swinney himself.
I just want to say, if you recall, when we were doing our projections, I said from the beginning, this is on Cade and will always be on Cade. If he plays really well, they're going to win. If he doesn't, it's going to be a struggle. And he just did not look good at all. And I don't think this is a motivation thing. I think Dabo was just being honest.
First off, I do have to thank Dabo Swinney, because I don't think there has ever been a more Rob Brown breakdown of a game than dudes got to be dudes. I don't know how many times I have collectively said dudes got to be dudes about college football, about NFL football. But I know it's a lot of times. So I like that take from Dabo. Dudes got to be dudes. Because that is true. It is just a bro version of players got to play. Playmakers got to make plays. This is why you have heard, and I there was a story Nick Saban told. You know, he's doing speeches and tours or whatever. He told a story a few days ago at a meet and greet, conversation, round table, whatever it was he was doing, where he said one of the first lessons that he got in coaching was early in his coaching career when he was coaching high school football. And he said we had a dude on the team. I think he said it was a running back. I don't remember the details of the story. They're not super important. But he basically said, we were in a spot where we were like down, we're driving, we got a score. And he said, I was calling the plays. And the head coach of that team, I went over to get his thoughts on a certain play in a certain situation. And the guy basically said, I don't care what play you call, as long as it ends up in that guy's hands. And basically said, this is our best player, this is our playmaker, put it in his hands. And Saban said, yeah, but like they know that guy's getting the ball, right? They know that guy's getting the ball. They're going to throw dudes at that dude should we not go somewhere else. And he said, man, Nick Saban, at the end of the day, if your best player can't make a play, it doesn't matter, right? So he said, that was the day that I learned, regardless of context or situation, we've got to put the ball into the hand of our playmakers and give them a chance to make a play. And I get it. I get what he's saying. That is, the bro version of that is, dudes got to be dudes. And dudes do got to be dudes. But while I agree with him, because there were a number of spots, I go back to again, the reason that I am on board with this criticism of Cade Klubnik from Dabo Swinney, and it's one game, not saying that this is going to be the case for the year, right? Maybe they need a tune-up game, even if he's not a freshman. Maybe he needs a tune-up game. Maybe they'll get that tune-up game against Troy this weekend. I would also argue, let me finish that thought. The reason I'm on board is play number one from Cade Klubnik, the opening play of the game. LSU gets the ball, they punt. Clemson's inside their own territory, 1st and 10 coming out. LSU brings one. They rush four, they bring an outside backer from defense left, offense right. The pass pro is perfect. In fact, if you haven't seen it yet, it's on my Twitter. I posted it this morning before we started the show because I knew that we were going to talk about it. I just screenshotted it and threw it up on my Twitter. Play number one of the game. The pass pro is perfect. LSU brings four off the line, and they bring a linebacker off their left, offense is right. Everybody is picked up. Everybody is blocked. I mean, Cade Klubnik has legitimately 1, 2, 3, probably 3.5, maybe 4 yards between him and the closest pass rusher when he releases the football. He's got an in-cutting wide receiver off a defensive back who is still dropping back when the pass is released. And he throws it, if I'm lying, I'm dying, 3 yards behind the wide receiver. He is exceptionally lucky. This is one of those plays that I say you're lucky you didn't get blown out in this game, Clemson. Because the very first play of the game, Clemson hits the LSU cornerback who was 2.5, 3 yards behind the in-cutting wide receiver, hits the LSU DB right in the number. I mean, right in the chest, and he just drops it. That should, play number one should have been a pick six. Should have been a pick. There was nobody stopping him from scoring from the 20-yard line where it hit him in the numbers. Now, I think there can be some level of blame on the offensive line. Progressively got worse as the game went on. The play calling was boring, standard, vanilla, predictable. There was a lot of RPO in this game that I think Cade Klubnik got wrong. I also think as the game went on, Cade Klubnik started getting progressively more afraid for his life because there were white jerseys all over him from the start to the finish. But on play number one, he had seen zero pressure in this game. Rush four, bring an outside blitzer. Clemson picked it up perfectly. And he just missed the dude. I mean, just met by 3 yards, just missed the guy, and he's lucky past one of the season wasn't pit six back the other way. Texter said, Debo was saying it to place blame and get heat off of him. He is a failure, and Clemson will reap the rotten crops sown. Get a new coach via the transfer portal. That's from Tolo J. Butane. J. Butane, appreciate the text. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far, but the war cry of the season has been, this year is a referendum on the philosophy of Dabo Swinney. And it ain't off to a great start, my dudes. Dudes gotta be dudes. And nobody was a dude in that game. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Rolling on with the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Was Dabo Swinney's criticism of Cade Klubnik fair or foul? That's the question that I have for you Clemson fans this morning. I rewatched a good chunk of that game yesterday. That's kind of the process for me. I watched the game on Saturday. I digest on Sunday. Just kind of think back and reevaluate what we saw on the initial view. And then ordinarily, on Monday/Tuesday, I will go back and I will watch game film of the games that matter. Obviously, the games of the teams that we cover here in the Upstate, as well as games like Ohio State, Texas, et cetera, et cetera. I rewatched a little bit more of that game earlier this morning. And I do not think the criticism is unfair. And I've said a few times about, say, Arch Manning. Arch looked bad. Like, bad. Not like, oh, you can see that he's the first. No. He looked bad. He did not look like he had command of the offense. He didn't look like he knew what was going on against Ohio State. And to some degree, it almost felt like Steve Sarkisian's play calling had to be throttled down because Arch, like, you couldn't throw more complex stuff at Arch.
All right. For some reason, I'm forgetting his name, was the coach for Tampa Bay. Where's the Kangle? Looks like he should be in the jazz club. I'm talking about the coach for Tampa Bay, won the Super Bowl.
Bruce Arians?
Yeah, he was on with McAfee yesterday, and he was talking about Arch Manning had to see NFL-style defenses where it's disguised and stuff, and he's talking about how this is more about Patricia's defense than anything because this is Arch Manning's first start and he's seeing an NFL defense, which is what we were saying earlier in the day yesterday. Same exact thing. And he's confirming. Bruce Arians is like, yeah, this kid's coming out here and seeing all this stuff and going, what is that?
That's fine and that's fair. And you're right. Like, that was the take I had yesterday, was I think Ohio State, that we had yesterday, that Ohio State's defense operated under a much more pro-style defense. A lot of disguised coverages, a lot of guys moving around at the snap, a lot of guys playing, starting in one spot despite playing another. However, Ohio State's not the only defense that does that. You know, maybe they have the advantage of having a longtime NFL defensive coordinator in Matt Patricia calling the shots. But if this dude is supposed to be this dude, because as Dabo Swinney so eloquently said, dudes got to be dudes, he's still got to be able to throw to the football. And it makes it worse. One of the things that frees up a defense to play and operate that way is, you know, if it works, if Arch goes out there and with an NFL-style defense, if I am play calling, all right, fine. You want to have three back but play a Tampa 2 and bring a guy up? Great. Arch is going read one. Is that cornerback stepping up? He's not. That's my read. Read one. Is that cornerback stepping up? He is. Over to read two. Is that cornerback drop back into a Tampa 2? Great, that's my read. Are both of them stepping up? Now I know I got a single high. Great, I'm looking for my tight end or whoever's crossing across the middle, the slot receiver, whatever. I need the guy to be able to process. At this level of college football, I am not going to accept, oh, it was a really complicated defense. Because if that was good enough to stop a dude who's supposed to be a Heisman Trophy candidate,
everyone would do it.
You wouldn't have quarterbacks winning Heismans anymore. You'd have cornerbacks and linebackers winning Heisman. But we don't. We don't give that excuse to anybody else. That being said, Arch is a dude playing in his first season as a genuine QB number one in a big-time program that has national championship aspirations. Dabo said, this ain't go number one for Cade Klubnik. He's not a freshman. If he was in Arch Manning's spot, then yeah, I'd be happy to say, give the young man some time to figure it out. But he's not. He's not. This is not the first time that he's been in this spot. This isn't new. However, I will say, while I think the criticism of Cade Klubnik is very fair, what I do not think is fair is to say it's exclusively on him. If your quarterback is struggling, change your play calling. If your offensive line is getting demolished, change your play calling. Start shifting protection. Start sliding protection. Start moving guys around. Start doing something. And this is why I have gone back to, I think that the stubbornness to change nothing for as long as possible of Dabo Swinney's, while many Clemson fans have found it endearing over the years, I think it's your biggest problem now. Because as I reevaluated that game this morning, I think my gut reaction that I had during the game on Saturday night was correct. You know what? What we're doing isn't working. But gosh dang it, that's what we do. So we're going to keep right on doing it. It is the football version of how many times do you have to run into the brick wall before you go, I should go around it or over it or find a new path? At some point, like, I am fine. I say all the time, be yourself to the best of your ability. But even I have to put on a suit and tie sometimes, because there are times when walking into a room in a nautical button-up boat shirt and flip-flops, because that's who I am. I am dressed in my official Rob Brown outfit today. But if I get called tomorrow, oh yeah, with the buttons down and everything. The only thing, dude, you know what I told the wife yesterday? I think I want a gold chain. I do. I saw Dion wearing one this weekend. I'm like, I think I'm gonna go get a gold chain. I do. I am just embracing who I am now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm gonna go, guy. I should probably lose the undershirt. Let's just go bare
say,
chest.
You're not mentioning the undershirt yeah. is going on there.
I think I might even have to drop that.
You got the buttons down. You got the undershirt showing.
Yeah. I'm just a fat beach slob.
No, you look like you're getting ready to blast some yacht rock while sailing.
Which sounds awesome. Are you kidding me? I make no bones about it. I live here. I love the mountains. I am a beach slob at heart.
I'll be on that boat with you. Don't worry. I'll sit in the middle because if I sit on the side, we'll take in water.
Don't rock the boat, baby. Be you. But I also understand that if I got a phone call tomorrow, I said, hey, Rob Brown, this is so-and-so at Duke's Mayo. And we'd like to become the title sponsor of the show. We would like to become the Rob Brown Show presented by Duke's Mayo. And we'd like to give you $500,000 a year to be the title sponsor of the Rob Brown Show. Can you come by and let's have a conversation? I'm not showing up like this because while it is unapologetically and authentically me, yes, I do want a gold chain. All right. While it is me, that version of me ain't good enough for that moment. Sometimes you got to figure out, I got to go around the wall. I can't go through it. I got to go around the wall. And if that is the case, then you know what? Like, do it. And I think that's kind of the point. I think that's kind of the thing. I think it really comes down to this team, just for whatever reason, can't recognize that what you're doing ain't going to do it. And when you don't change anything, do not be shocked and or surprised when it doesn't work again. That LSU team, I will say this, I had a reaction because I heard yesterday, and Lonzo pointed it out from Heather Dinich, who I respect. Of all the voices that network has covering college football, Dinich is up at the top of the ones that I actually do respect as a voice. When she was like, I think this LSU team is a front runner for the national championship. I was like, whoa, let's slow the roll. We've played one game. We've played one the game. And it is very possible that maybe, as we have maybe done with everybody, maybe we have overestimated Clemson, right? Oh, 12-0, winning the ACC, first round bye, no question. Maybe we've overestimated Clemson a little bit. Maybe we should not be putting LSU there yet. Maybe she's right. Maybe LSU goes out there and they beat Florida by 35. Again, coulda, shoulda, woulda blown out Clemson. If nothing else, should have been one touchdown better than it was. But the point here is, I'm going to say slow the roll. And when it comes to Cade Klubnik, I think everything Dabo said about Cade is fair. But I'm also going to ask the question, how much of the stubbornness, how much of the refusal to change, to adapt, to do things differently was the cause of Cade regressing to old Cade? How much of the Garrett's not here to call the Garrett offense, Garrett's here to call the Clemson offense? How much of that is this team just running into the brick wall, backing up, shiners on both eyes, broken bleeding nose, snaggled tooth because one chipped, looking at it and going, well, you know what? We've run face first into the brick wall all night. Eventually, that brick wall's got to break, right? Let's just keep doing what we're doing. Light it up. One more time, boys. Run into that brick. How many times do we have to do that? Tiger Pal Rachel texts the show, said, why does the play calling continue to to be so vanilla? Are we overanalyzing Cade Klubnik? Maybe he's just not that good. Maybe he's just a quarterback that had stats against bad competition. Last I recall, he didn't do anything against Georgia, South Carolina, just garbage time touchdowns against Texas and nothing against LSU. And that's fair too. Maybe there was some over-evaluation. And there is a take. I was listening yesterday to the Browns assistant general manager because I'm a masochist. I was listening to the Browns assistant general manager.
Is that the female?
Yes.
Because it kept popping up on my feed. Yes. I never actually listened to it.
Browns assistant general manager Catherine Hickman did a press conference, and they asked her about quarterbacks, and she gave the most not answer ever. And she's like, well, we acquire data points and we evaluate the metrics. And I'm like, listen, y'all know me, I'm a big dork. I love data points and metrics and numbers and analysis and algorithms. I wish I was a smart math boy so I could get even more into them. But I also know, even as a numbers guy, sometimes you just gotta watch the guy play. Sometimes you just got to watch the guy play and go, he can and he can't. And when I look at Cade Klubnik, I think I went too Moneyball this offseason. I think I spent the whole season going, look at the numbers, look at the numbers, look at the numbers. Look at the numbers, the touchdowns, the completion percentage, the ratio and all that. And I didn't go, what can and can't the dude do? And you know who else I don't think did that? Dabo Swinney. Because you just came back and did the Clemson offense again. And in the face of a good defense, they just beat you. They just beat you. We got to run to a break. Sports Flash now. More college football next. The Rob Brown Show after this. Sports Flash.
Well done. The new AP Top 25 poll dropped yesterday with the Ohio State Buckeyes claiming the top spot with 55 votes ahead of number 2 Penn State with 7 and number 3 LSU with 3. Georgia and Miami round out the top 5 ahead of Oregon, Texas, Clemson, Notre Dame, and South Carolina all in the top 10. Despite a win, Arizona State dropped to 12 ahead of Florida and Florida State, who jumped from unranked to number 14. The Atlanta Braves lost to Chicago Cubs 4-3 yesterday. Joey Wentz took the loss, giving up 7 hits and 4 runs in 4 innings, despite striking out 8. Atlanta had 8 hits, including homers from Ozzie Albies and Eli White. The LA Dodgers took a surprising 9-7 loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates last night, but it wasn't without its big moment. Shohei Ohtani hit the 46th home run of the year, which also served as his 100th home run as a Dodger. That's pretty good. That's actually really good.